This is Nell, and I'm reading from the hardcover edition of Mambo Peligroso by Patricia Chow. My first passage is on page 67. Finally, Catalina had gotten her wish. She was the new mystery girl, and everyone wanted a piece of her. At clubs, she never sat down, dancing with dozens of different men as well as the usual suspects. Gentlemanly Tino, Hank, whose bookmaker made her feel fragile, and Carlos, whose antics left her breathless and who flirted relentlessly. For him, it was all part of the dance. She could now usually follow whatever beat a partner pulled out of his hat. She even, one night at the Copa, got a lesson on something called old palladium style. The syncopation made her high, especially during long, fast Tito Puente numbers. The man who taught her this esoteric rhythm had once been, he told her, king of the palladium, as he was now king of the Copacabana. But even he, she thought, never had the charisma of her teacher, his arrogance, the thrilling cruelty of the lead when he thought she was not up to par. During privates, when the music was cranked up, instead of talking, he had taken to giving her hand signals. Smaller steps. Work from the diaphragm. Loosen your right arm. Loosen your left arm. Faster. Slower. You're off the beat. Don't backlead. Wait for me. Because sign language had once been her only way of communicating, Catalina was ultra-sensitive to these signals. When it was obvious she'd completely lost the beat, she could always hear the clave, but it sometimes would occasionally refuse to translate to her feet. He'd pull her close and dance her in place, their knees flexing, feet barely lifting off the floor. This is what made her know she was doomed, because she so willingly let him have that kind of control. She knew his body now, the smell of sandalwood off on his skin, getting stronger as the lesson progressed, the texture of the Egyptian cotton t-shirts he favored, his large palms and the large, long fingers that gave just the right amount of flex to signal a semi, single, double turn. His good eye, his blind eye, which seemed to be looking at her all the time, the effeminate nose, the pure cut of his mouth and jawline. His large feet in their hard-soled shoes, percussive, dead-on, relentless. And there was something else about him that was not exactly sex. Something that she could not name, but what was irresistible. Second passage is 87. I told you how that girl fucked. She was already wet for me, and when I felt that, there was no turning back. I rammed her up against the wall under the stairs, and she threw back her head, and te juro, I wanted to kill her and make her come at the same time. I missed you, puppy. Ven, puppy, she hissed in my ear. I was so close. I told you how that girl scratched and bit. I thought at first it was her nails and I turned my head, but the next instant it registered what she was doing. The bitch was trying to blind me. I had no leverage, us being pressed up so tight against each other, so the first thing I did was let go of her, but still she hung on, with the hand that wasn't holding the knife, with her thighs, with that devil pussy of hers. It was just like the first morning when she practically raped me. She had already gotten the blade exactly where she wanted. How I did what I did next, I have no idea. I jerked my head back hard to dislodge the knife, and then I grabbed her hair with one hand, and with the thumb and forefinger of the other, pressed against the twin carotid arteries in her neck, the one that feed oxygen to the brain. I knew if I pressed long enough that her circulation would be cut off and she'd pass out. I thought I was going to pass out myself from the pain, which was so bad the only way I could describe it is to say that it felt like forked lightning. I couldn't see a thing out of either eye by then, so I did what I did by feel. Her arteries under my thumb and forefinger, pulsing. Her pussy around my cock, pulsing. "Aye," she said, just like a sigh. How was I to know that she was dying? She did not feel like someone who was dying. I do remember that when I finally let her go, her skin was burning hot to the touch. By some miracle, my right eye had cleared up, and I could see that her eyes were wide open and rolled back, like maybe she was having an orgasm. I laid her back on the floor under the stairs. All that blood was mine, but she was the one who wasn't moving. I took out my bandana and pressed it as hard as I could over my left eye. My final passage is page 156. This was what no one in the Mambo world ever saw, what Wendy and Tuerto were like at home. They were dancing in slow motion, languid, playing off each other, switching the lead, making up moves, and laughing when they screwed up. Luis was sprawled on the floor, watching sleepily, as if he'd seen this 1,000 times. Finally, the lead seemed to be Wendy's. There was Tuerto, super femme, his hands fluttering in the air as he spun 2, 3, 4, 5 times, flicking his fingers before he strutted across into a back lunge. Despite herself, Catalina felt herself getting wet, or was it from before when he had touched her in the hallway? Wendy spun him again, made him circle around her, and then, as the song ended, brought him into a melodramatic dip that he milked, arching back over her palm and flinging his arm over his eyes. The new song began, they separated, and he held out his hand to Catalina. She'd never felt less like dancing, but stepped up dutifully. Crossbody, turn, whirlpool, she finally nailed that last guillotine, hesitation into a tango step. Wendy was curled up on the couch watching. Catalina knew without looking the expression on her face. Forget it, Nina. There's no one like him and me. It doesn't matter how you dance or how you fuck. Luis was applauding politely. The next thing that would happen is that he would ask her to dance, or Wendy would. She couldn't bear that. So she made her apologies, saying she had papers to grade, got her coat, kissed Wendy and Luis goodbye. Despite herself, she was unable to look Wendy in the eye. Tuerto walked her to the elevator. He said, I'll call you when the coast is clear. Bastard, she said. It was strange how she never used his name, Tuerto, Oswaldo, or even any endearments. He put the tip of his tongue exactly into the corner of her mouth, withdrew it, and said the words that were always her downfall. And you love it, Lena.